Please stand for the reading of the Gospel. The Holy Gospel according to John, the 17th chapter. Jesus prayed, "I ask not only on behalf of these, but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one. As you, Father, are in me, and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one. As we are one, I in them and you in me, so that they may become completely one, so that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them, even as you have loved me. Father, I desire that those also whom you have given me may be with me where I am, to see my glory, which you have given me because you love me, before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, the world does not know you, but I know you, and these know that you have sent me. I made your name known to them, and I will make it known, so that the love with which you have loved me may be in them, and I in them." The Gospel of the Lord.
You
may be seated. Good morning. My name is Hannah Johnsrud, and I have recently returned from a year of living and serving in Jerusalem and the West Bank, often and otherwise known as the Holy Land, as a part of the ELCA's Young Adults in Global Mission program. This morning, I bring you greetings from Presiding Bishop Elizabeth Eaton, the rest of the ELCA's churchwide staff, and from our companions in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan and the Holy Land. I am so excited to be with you today to share more about my year of mission service and how the ELCA's global ministries are transforming lives here at home and on six continents across the globe. Most importantly, I am here to say thank you for all that you already do to support our neighbors, both locally and globally. The Young Adults in Global Mission Program, or YAGM program, consists of young adults ages 21 to 29, the ELCA's youngest missionaries, who step out into the world and into the open arms of our companions. They serve on six continents and 12 countries across the globe, from Argentina to Australia, and from Madagascar to Rwanda. Wherever YAGMs go, they serve through the lens of the theology of accompaniment. This theology invites ELCA missionaries and all of us into relationship with our global companions with a focus on mutuality, vulnerability, and interdependence. It says that we are all a part of God's world and God's mission, and that by living and serving shoulder to shoulder, we can learn more about ourselves, each other, and God's work in the world. For me, this work looked like serving as an English teaching assistant to kindergarten through second grade students at the Dar al-Kalima Lutheran School, and as a communications assistant, writing English language publications at the Dar al-Kalima University College of Arts and Culture, which are both educational ministries of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan and the Holy Land. I lived with a beautiful and loving Palestinian Christian family during my year of service. My host mom, Suzanne, is a librarian at the university college where I worked, and my host dad, Awad, is a Palestinian police officer. My host brothers, Wasim, aged 7, and Kais, aged 3, were terribly rambunctious and loud little boys who love Fortnite and Baby Shark, respectively. They taught me so much about the world and about myself, and they will always be Ahli, my family. In Arabic, the language that I spoke with my friends and family in Jerusalem and the West Bank, the word for a foreigner woman is ajnabiyya. I heard this word near constantly during my year of service, from taxi drivers, grocery store clerks, from teachers, from people walking by on the street, and even from my host family. It was my most apparent identity while I was living in another country through the YAGM program. Eventually, I would be able to speak Arabic fluently enough to playfully push back at those who dismissed me as nothing more than an ajnabiya, a foreigner, and to avoid the ajnabiya tax, the extra money paid on basic goods and services, because as a foreigner, I surely would not know any better. But I would never be able to be seen as anything other than a foreign woman at first glance, even as community members learned how I fit into relationship with them. Ruth, the main character in the story we heard today, is also marked as a foreigner throughout the biblical story that bears her name. She is first introduced to us simply as a Moabite woman, one of the wives of Naomi and Elimelech's sons. Even though Elimelech and Naomi are the strangers to a new land in the beginning of this story, as they flee to foreign lands as economic refugees to escape famine in Bethlehem, it is Ruth that is noted as a foreigner. She is a Moabite, not a member of the tribe of Israel. The narrator of this story never lets us forget that Ruth is a Moabite. She is a foreigner. She does not belong to the people of Israel, God's chosen and beloved. This is not the playful teasing of my friends and family in Palestine who called me ajnabiya as they planted kisses on both of my cheeks and wrapped their arms around me. Naming her a foreigner is not kind. It is not innocuous. Based on her identity, Ruth does not even deserve mention in the sacred story, let alone a story that centers around her. So, why does she get her own story? And while we're on the topic, why is the story of Ruth even in the Bible at all? At first glance, this is just a nice little story about a woman who really loved her mother-in-law. In fact, God is hardly mentioned at all in the book. There are no burning bushes, no partings of the sea, or miracles. God isn't present in an obvious way. And isn't that usually the reality of daily life? I don't know about all y'all, but I haven't seen any burning bushes in my life lately, or had angels visit me to tell me glad tidings of great joy. In some ways, I thought that moving to the Holy Land would surely change that. On the actual ground where Jesus walked, I definitely would feel something. I would hear God speak to me. I would enter the church of the Nativity, where tradition states that Jesus Christ was born 2,000 years ago, and I would have a moment where I just knew that God was there, because he would tell me. And I hate to break it to y'all, but I didn't have that experience. What I did feel was a profound disappointment that I wasn't able to access God in that moment, even among all of the praying and weeping pilgrims who did seem to be having a transformational experience. Despite being on what many people in the world consider the most sacred ground, I couldn't perceive God in that moment. Looking back on it now, I realize that a lot of us probably feel a lack of God in the spaces that are supposed to be most holy, most sacred. So where is God in Ruth and in our own lives? Perhaps it seems stereotypical, but it is in the love that is so ever-present and tangible in the story of these incredible women. There is a reason Ruth's most famous line, "Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God," is often used in weddings. And while I understand the sentiment behind using this text to talk about romantic love and the commitments made in marriage, I think it misses the broader point. Ruth's declaration at the end of this reading from today that she would follow her mother-in-law Naomi to a foreign land, a land that sees her as nothing more than a foreigner at best and an intruder and a corrupter at worst, is radical love. It is brave love. It is selfless. Ruth chooses to go above and beyond what is required by law and culture to stay with Naomi, even when she has every reason and every legal right to return to her mother's home and to make a better life for herself. Ruth is under no obligation to follow her mother-in-law. It would be smarter and, in fact, safer for Ruth to just go home and do her best to start over. Instead, Ruth makes a declaration and a decision that is almost impossible to understand. "Do not press me to leave you," she chastises Naomi. In this moment, Ruth chooses love, despite the danger to herself, despite the pressure to do something easier. And the word used for love that Ruth chooses is the same word in ancient Hebrew used for the unconditional, faithful love in action that God shows to us. It is the same love that we are called to be a part of in our daily lives as we interact with each other in the world. And it is through this love that we can see the presence of God each and every day. With this lens, it's easy to see that God is present all through Ruth in the simple and quiet realities of everyday life. He is present in the barley harvest, in the grains scattered across the threshing floor. He is present in the love of a daughter for her mother. He is present in the lives of the hungry, the refugee, the immigrant. God is present through every moment of this story, though God doesn't act in a way that is flashy or obvious. And it is in this daily love and action where I saw God most strongly over the past year. In the early morning sunshine slanting through the ever-present dust to warm the white buildings. In the silver-green trembling of the olive branches. In the faces of 40 kindergartners, sometimes smiling, sometimes crying. In the arms of my youngest host brother. In the cooking of my teta, my grandmother, who was always worried that I wasn't getting enough to eat, even as I continued to gain weight. I saw God in the hope and the resilience and the vibrancy of the Palestinian people, who choose to continue to live in their homeland despite the insufferable circumstances resulting from the Israeli military occupation, despite very real injustice and oppression and violence against their person. Though I was the one, like Ruth, marked foreigner, it was my host community, the Palestinian people, who showed the love of Ruth, the love of God, to me. And as I quickly learned, the only way to respond to that kind of unconditional, faithful, ever-present love is to turn like Ruth, and to show that same God love, that same love in action to others. As I learned what it meant to be truly loved, I learned to turn to our companions and to say, "Do not press me to leave you or to turn back from following you." I learned to listen to their stories and to hold them sacred. I learned to advocate for their freedom and for a just peace in the land that we call holy. I learned to be brave in declaring my love for them, Palestinians, even when the pressures of the world would make it easier to deny them. Most importantly, I learned to love them, wholly, fully, and actively. And this love isn't just something that makes us feel good or makes us treat other people better either. It empowers us to transform the systems of judgment and oppression that say that our distinct identities should separate us from each other. Remember that Ruth was always called out as Ruth the Moabite, the foreigner that doesn't belong. Throughout the book of Ruth, she never stops being named Ruth the Moabite. But through the course of the story, through the power of the love in action the characters show to each other, it ceases to be a derogatory title. She does not lose her unique ethnic and national identity as a Moabite, but she does become fully embraced and included within the community of Israel, even to the point of being one of the ancestors of King David, one of the Kingdom of Israel's greatest leaders, and an ancestor of Jesus Christ. This is not a story about assimilation, but about full recognition of and respect for each other's unique backgrounds and identities. Is this not what Jesus prays for as well in our gospel text from today, that they will all be one? By loving one another in the way that Ruth loves Naomi, the way that God loves us, regardless of the barriers that the world says should separate us, we can move towards this kind of transformational unity. Towards the end of my year of service, I was baking cookies with Kais, my youngest host brother. We were chatting in Arabic about nothing in particular, probably animals and swimming, which are his two favorite things, when all of a sudden, my host mom casually called me an ajnabiya, a foreigner. Kais looked at me, clearly confused by this statement, so I asked him, "Kais, hal ana ajnabiya? Am I a foreigner?" He shook his head immediately, certain in his knowledge that I was not a foreigner. Thinking he was confused, I asked a follow-up question. "Kais, hal ana filistiniya? Am I a Palestinian?" Again, with even more confidence, he shook his head, continuing to peer at me. At the end of my year of service, after a year of living a life of intentional relationship and love in action, my identity had shifted. Certainly, I was not a Palestinian. But just as clear to my young host brother was that I was no longer a foreigner. My identity lay somewhere in between, neither local nor foreigner, but a beloved member of the family, united through our time spent together, loving each other. And so, united in Christ and in love with our brothers and sisters in Palestine, I would like to end in the name of the triune God, in the language of our Palestinian siblings. Bismillah. El Ab, wal Ibn, wal Ruh al-Qudus, el Elahi al-Wahid. Amin.